Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. You must listen to the open loops, a theme park for absurd beliefs and systems of integration between the mind and the creative spirit. Open loops.
Today on Open Loops, we have Kathy Spaz. She is a, well, she's a lot of things, but when it comes to being a high performer, when it comes to being an artist and particular performing artist, she really excels in helping highly gifted and sensitive artists and performers achieve their highest potential. And I you know, it's not just, I mean, look, you know, I've had some people on that, sure, they're starting a coaching business, but Kathy's been featured in all these different magazines, different press outlets, in the media, has people that I've recognized on, she's worked with, she's had them featured on her show, Spotlight Stress. She has a book coming out about it. I mean, clearly this work you are doing, and I'm very curious about the modality that you teach or work with people to help them claim their spotlight. Yeah. It's making an impact. So I'm always curious. I love the artist. I want to speak to the artist and all of us today. Claim your shine. We're going to find out about it. Kathy, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Welcome. And never have I ever heard anyone say my name that sensual the way you did, Craig, because I really like the way you said it.
Kathy Spaz. Kathy, yeah. It was sensual. It was sensual.
It's really sensual, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay, yes, you are a highly sensitive type. This is what
you are tingling my I don't know the word because I'm from Belgium, so I'm not always good with the terms in English. So I don't know the word, but you're tingling my hearing senses. So, yeah.
Oh, wow. Wow. This is, I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate you coming. I really do. I mean, I'm fascinated by, you're a show jumper. You were a show jumper.
I was, yeah.
So that means horses?
That means horses. And I grew up with a father who was in the horse industry. And, you know, it's quite a rough industry. And it's was at that time mostly men dominated, which was fine with me because I was, you know, half a boy. So it's okay. But it was a hard world. And even as a kid, there was a lot of pressure being put on me. So when I was 13, 14 years old, I was riding international shows. And having a lot of fun, having the time of my life until just a few years. And then after that, I like really like went head over, like down from the pressure. I just had no idea how to even do a decent round anymore. I was always under stress because my father wanted the best for me and wanted me to be my best version of myself as well. But he had obviously no idea what he was doing. So he did like the wrong things that he thought that was motivating me, but was actually like stripping me from all my confidence and, you know, feeling like I can trust myself and learn even, because I was just like freezing from being stressed and making mistakes over and over the same ones. So I think that that took me about 20 years to get out of that circle, or maybe longer. But then I actually eventually did. And when I was, I think, 29 or 30, 31, I don't know, years old, I was riding international again with a horse that I had completely trained myself from the beginning till that point. And we were riding international competition again until I pulled him to America. But yeah, that was actually really interesting for me to see how I could turn that around and just step into it from a different perspective again, because it had felt for so long like something I had to do, and I had to prove myself, and I had to be and do this and that. And now I was back in a space where I could actually enjoy connecting with my horse, having fun, and letting my passion flow. So I've experienced in these past few years still riding, when it's not flowing, I have to take a step back from it, because yeah, otherwise, like, for especially with sensitive animals like horses, they mirror you out like hell. So, you know, that's just too confronting if you're not up to their speed, up to their level.
Yeah.
So sometimes you do have to take a step back in order to like really enter the game again. So that's been an interesting journey. Yeah.
Well, here's what I want to know, Kathy. And I'm going to ask you this because I have had several guests on this show. I'm thinking of three coming to mind right now. And it's always horses that are the spiritual animal, the most, that is the one I hear the most. They're telepathic, communicate. I know at the beginning of this interview you said, Greg, I want to know about UFOs, but maybe that's going to be too weird for this. But we're going to get right into horse telepathy with you right now. No, I mean, I am curious if you feel some kind of a divine connection to horses, because I keep hearing stories from people that are more attuned that horses and humans have this kind of soul bond connection that is very different than even dogs per se. I mean, what might you say about that?
I'm actually really getting goosebumps all over, because it's the first time someone described it to me in that way. And you know what, when they talk about spiritual animals, you always picture a cat, right? But I have a cat, I have dogs, but even as a kid, I was always a social kid, you know, very outgoing, very brave, doing everything and good at most of the things I did. But I never felt like I fitted in. And with these animals, you just felt at home because they're not judging, you know, they love you for who you are. And they can just unapologetically be themselves, and so can you be around them. But from my heart, it's always been the horse that spoke to me, because my father had a horse ranch. And when we drove home to my mother, they were divorced, back away from the horse ranch, and I would see a horse in the field, I was like, wow, daddy, look at that horse. And I can be so moved. And I think it's like mesmerizing just when you look in their eyes. It's like there's no such thing. Like it's so deep that you can look into their soul. It's amazing. I mean, like, yeah, that's like such a deep connection that you can get with a horse. And it's about unity. And otherwise, you can forget about it, you know, because they rule the show if they want to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a guy. I don't know if you've heard of this guy. I got to find out more info and send you. I heard him on one of these radio shows once the show that I aspire to one day be on, Coast to Coast AM. That is a late night radio show here in the U.S. that is exclusively about these kind of topics, alternative views. And they have a lot of life coaches and healers on. But one of the weirdest guests they've ever had on is a guy that claims that he is a horse in human form. Like, he knows that he was born with a horse's, his experience is all horses. He remembers being a horse in a past life, or he feels the energies of being a horse now, but he swears his whole story is that, and that's why he could communicate with horses. I mean, it's a very fascinating and strange story, but the point it being that for a long time, people have felt something different about these animals. And I imagine being a highly sensitive person. I mean, when did you start tuning into that? Were you aware of your sensitive nature when you were first show jumping, or did that come later as you started working on the stuff with yourself? I mean, what is your journey as a highly sensitive person, as you describe it?
Yeah, that's quite late. I think I was around 29 when I discovered that I was highly sensitive. And it was even later, I would say around 35, that I discovered that I was highly gifted. So it's interesting, especially because it helps you understand more of your, you know, trajectory in life. It helps you understand, you know, oh, that's why people thought I was arrogant, because I have the need to know everything. And I will, like in Belgium, we would say, I would ask you the underwear off of your body, you know, because I want to know everything. And that's something that's a very unique trait of being highly gifted, because you're so curious that you can like not contain yourself with asking questions, because you need to know the deeper meaning of everything. And being highly sensitive is part of that too, because being highly sensitive actually means processing information on a deeper level. People who are highly gifted are doing that. So most highly gifted people are also highly sensitive. So that is very interesting, because it has a lot to say about, you know, what you experience in life, but it also has great many gifts that come by it.
Yeah, I definitely want to know more about your individual journey here, but because of my curiosity, you can diagnose me later, whatever you want to tell me, but my curiosity tells me, you know, there's so much out there right now, Kathy, about neurodivergence, right? We hear this word all the time, neurodivergent, people that are, you know, on the spectrum, which, you know, refers to autism usually. But I know some people are reclaiming that. And speaking of, you know, neurodivergent kind of categorizes a whole, or it's an umbrella term for a whole category of different conditions that people have. And then I've also heard about empaths, right? And I know there are a lot of coaches that work exclusively with empaths, but I'm curious, you know, because you've really done a lot in your work to define, I mean, you even put it on your website, HSPs, these highly sensitive persons. What are some of the, just so we can get a little more clarity around this, I mean, how would you distinguish between some of the other ways people are categorizing different, you know, conditions that people have versus what you're working with usually?
Yeah. So being a highly sensitive person, it's interesting because it's not being neurodivergent, a little bit is, but it's not labeled as such in the, you know, psychology. But it has a few categories that you can really dive into. So we have, like I said, our brain works differently. We have a deeper way of processing information, which I believe is the most important aspect of being highly sensitive. And it has to do with the fact that our right hemisphere of the brain is stronger activated than with non-HSP. So that means that when you look at a picture, and you know, this is research, this is not like something we think is going on. No, this is research, putting patches on people's head, you know, doing the studies. So when they do that, when they study people's brain activity, and they show pictures of people smiling, a dog, you know, the simple pictures, what we've noticed is that non-HSP, so regular people, they have like one place where the brain lights up. So the brain activates in one place. HSP, highly sensitive people, when they look at the same picture, they have several parts of the brain that light up. So the same information is being processed on different levels. It has a deeper way of processing information. So that means, very simply put, you have this toolbox, and someone who is not HSP will take the hammer, use it, and go at it. Someone who is highly sensitive will look at the entire toolbox, and it can sometimes take a little bit more time, but they will also see things that other people didn't see and know how to use the things in a way that other people just didn't even think about or notice or, you know. So that's very interesting. That being said, the right part of the brain, which is stronger activated, means being empathic, being good at finding solutions, your creativity. And I always thought, you know, I'm not creative. I'm not good at doing arts or painting, or I love to dance, but best you feed me some drinks before, you know, if I want to feel like I'm doing a good job. So yeah, I'm not a singer. You know, I don't have those things. I love to write, not a poet, you know. So I thought, I'm not creative. But when it comes to finding solutions, my God, look at me go. You know, that's where my family thrives. We are amazing at finding solutions. So that is where genetically our creativity is being evolved, is most evolved. So that is like a little part of being highly sensitive. There's also the physical part. So in my case, senses can really trigger me. So when the dogs keep barking, that like can really upset me, because it's really penetrating for my brain. Like, for example, I have a baby girl, she's a year old, and she's been crying a lot. But don't know if you know the difference between a boy and a girl. At our house, my son, who's three, he cried like this, you know. My daughter, she's like full out, like crazy going. So when we were in Ibiza a few months ago, and my daughter had such a rough time, and she had been screaming so much, I was so overstimulated that my girlfriend, and I had not brought the children to the trip, you know, my girlfriend, she flushed the toilet, and I was going into the toilet after her, because we went with some friended couples on that trip. I went in and I thought my head was exploding from the flushing toilet. So that is how far I had gone with being overstimulated due to the sound. After being 4 or 5 days in Ibiza without the kids, I was fine. I had no more issues with that, but I was, you know, I had calmer senses. My senses were able to calm down in that period without all of the, you know, overstimulation of two children all the time around me. So that was interesting. But there's also the fact of skin for me. My skin is very hypersensitive, hyperreactive. So it means like, I love those, you know, sweaters who have glitter on it. I cannot wear it because I will be itching and scratching all day, and it's awful. But there's also people, when I gave lectures, they said like, you know what, the light is too bright for me, which I hadn't noticed. But for them, the light was too bright because they were sensitive on that aspect. There's also like children who have trouble with eating certain foods because the smell is too strong, or, you know, the taste or the texture in their mouth is like really strange to them. And those are like a few ways that physically, which is proven, you know, that you can have these issues. But to be honest, I had some research done and my lungs and my bowels, is that it? My colon, they're also hyperreactive. So isn't that interesting? You know, so I think, you know, maybe there's a lot more to this than that we might even, yeah, not making any claims here, but it is interesting because I have seen a lot of highly sensitive people who have trouble with their bowels because the brain and the, you know, digestion is like literally connected with each other. Interesting, you know, yeah. So we can influence, like I literally learned that I could influence letting go of things by literally letting go of things by, you know, having a healthy food lifestyle and cleansing my bowels meant like it was easier for me to let go of things as well on the brain. So that was interesting. That's something I haven't actually shared with anyone in an interview yet. So I have no idea why we're taking that.
I got
road.
The bowels exclusive. Yes.
Yeah. So
that's amazing. Yeah, this is really, I don't mean to interrupt, but I am curious, and maybe you'll speak to this in your next point. What do you think is, is there any kind of research about why this might be happening for some people or what the advantage of from an evolutionary standpoint to have people that experience this? I mean, I can understand, I don't know. The only thing that feels similar is people that, you know, just have natural synesthesia that they can hear colors and stuff like that. And I'm going, okay, that seems like a very just a positive benefit of a different kind of sensitivity. But I'm curious kind of where you think this fits into the overall. Yeah, let's see if you can answer this question. Very tough question. But where do you think highly sensitive people fit into the overall realm of human experience?
I think that's a very easy question because what we've seen from research is that animals can be highly sensitive as well. So for people as well as animals, it's like 1 in 5 people or animals that are highly sensitive. It is genetically, you know, defined. So if you are highly sensitive, probably one of your parents or great parents are as well. So that's what we know. What we also know is that when they've studied animals, it is the highly sensitive animal that will alert the flock when there is a change in the environment, when there's possible threat, when there might be danger. So it's actually these animals that help the flock survive because they notice things that the other ones just haven't seen. Huh. So that is interesting. Even that their brain does not function in the way ours does, it is processing information on a deeper level. So yeah, that is definitely, you know, I like to compare us with the X-Men. Like sometimes I do feel a little bit more evolved because we have these abilities, you know, having that stronger activated right hemisphere of the brain is not something to be taken light because in emotional circumstances and social circumstances, it can be quite the hassle because we tend to feel and take over other people's energies, which can be hard if you don't know how to deal with that. But can you see the gift in that as well for caretakers, you know, caregivers, for doctors, for actors, for singers, inspiring the world, you know, for consultants for in the past, like people like Machiavelli, you know, who were like guiding the royalty, those were the highly gifted, highly sensitive people. Not saying Machiavelli per se was one, I did not study him enough to know that, but I have seen things like, for example, I do believe Da Vinci was for sure. Mm. Yeah, there's a lot of people back in history where you can see like, there you go, you know, because they also have that like for some presidents in America as well, there's some that you see that have really the empathic side as well. And that is where you see like, the evolution is moving towards a more humane society. Those were the presidents that also probably had that trait as part of them, because it does not mean, because you're highly sensitive and you can feel things a lot stronger than other people might. It does not define you as weak, because that's what some people feel like. Those are a bunch of crybabies because they're so sensitive. But it's normal. If something enters your brain and it's going through a lot more, you know, making a lot more equations than someone else's, it has more meaning than it does for someone else. And that means that, I don't know if you have this expression as well, but in Belgium, we say you can turn a mosquito into an elephant. And that is, I probably invented for us, because that is what we'll do. But we will also do that in situations where other people just did not think about interesting things or dangers or flaws or possibilities, opportunities. Those are things that we will filter out as well a lot sooner than other people will. So, a coin with two sides.
But that said, you know, I am thinking about the world in general, and I know there's been a lot of philosophical debate and even, I think it's a philosophical question about, do we believe that this world right now is not being ruled by the sensitive people? Because I kind of think it's not. I think the guy's name is Ian McGilchrist, who wrote this book about the master and the emissary, and his whole argument being that society for some reason has shifted from being more right brain to left brain. And as we can see, there are a lot of issues with that. There are a lot of issues with that in this world. I mean, look, I'm all for the sensitive people, but what can we do to get you guys more in power?
Cool. I think that that's our job. You know, I don't think that anyone has to do anything, but the more we step up and take our own shine, you know, and let it out, the world will shift naturally. That's just the thing. You know, I don't think that people like Trump and Putin are highly sensitive people. No, right. I don't. No, but, you know, for sure there are people like Arianna Huffington, Oprah. I'm sure that they would relate more to this kind of work than, and I do see those people as leaders of the world as well, because they are influencing so many people, and they decide on a certain level, you know, what is going on in the world as well. So it's about us stepping up our game, and then we'll shift things around and making, you know, if you look on social media, I do believe that HSP or empaths or whatever you like to call it are running the show partially, because those are the people everyone resonates with, because you know, they know how to touch you because they feel what it is you need. And they know how to, how to turn that into something positive as well very often. So I think that that's just something that's also naturally evolving. Yeah.
I was going to say, you know what? I don't know if you've ever had Brené Brown on your show, but I don't think you should, because I think she's baby sauce compared to what you offer. This woman's just going out there. She's going, oh, yes, we should express our sadness once in a while. I'm going, yeah, but Kathy over here, do you know what she experiences on a daily basis? She is so beyond vulnerability. I'm saying, Kathy Spaz, you... I think Brené, you know what? She needs to rework her atlas of emotions, because you're the new queen in town when it comes to sensitivity. That's what I'm saying here.
Brené interviewed Bono, so I'm not sure I can lift to that level yet, but working on it step by step. also feeling sad some days, also feeling frustrated and angry and crying some days, and other days, you know, smiling at it and moving forward. I think that's life for everyone.
Yes. No, and in all seriousness, I am happy that somebody is out there talking about this stuff. But it does seem that when it comes to the realm of the highly sensitive, I mean, this is not even... Well, okay, this is my question for you. So going back to your story, when you were jumping, and this is the other thing that's interesting to me about show jumping versus what I went to school for, you know, acting, this glorious, you know, you gotta really, it requires you to go into your own emotions and bring those out, and you need to create these character traits and all this stuff. One might argue that show jumping, it could be, on the surface at least, less, I'll put this in quotes, less artistic, that there is more of a left brain, there's more of a athletic component to it. I'm not saying this is true, but I think in common perception, you know, I haven't heard a lot of people compare people that do this work with artists. That said, here's what I'm wondering for you. Do you believe that because you weren't naturally, and this is where I'm thinking you're going, but I could be wrong, because you weren't connecting fully, or at least able to connect to this, to the creative powers that you had as a highly sensitive person, is that what burnt you out the first time? I mean, how would you relate to your natural sensibilities and in the way you function in the world as a show jumper when you were doing it in your teens versus where you are now?
Yeah, I think that you're probably at it. I was working from the left side of the brain back then, and that's probably the reason why it wasn't working. And that's what I see when I work with artists as well, because they do the same thing. They have an audition and they're in their heads instead of connected with their bodies and in tune with themselves, because that's where the magic lies, you know? Yes, there is our smarts and our intelligence and our experience, but let's be honest, when you're really good at something and you've trained, that is on automatic pilot. You know, you don't have to be thinking about it, because it's all about being in the moment. And I want to express being as something that was really hard for me and still is sometimes, because with our overactivated brain, it's sometimes really hard to, you know, make it calmer and flush out the brain noise. But that's why I had to learn these strategies and techniques I could use to calm my brain down and, you know, find some inner peace, be in the moment and connect with what I'm doing. And it's because of that, you know, being more probably in tune with my abilities, with my talents from the right side of the brain, that my intelligence from the left side is also showing up on a higher level. But even more, like, for example, one of the things that I've heard most when I was working with clients, because I don't really coach anymore at this point, but one of the things I was told is, like, you know, I don't even have to say it, but you just read between the lines and know exactly what I need. And that is because you are 100% in the moment and you stay the fuck away, you know, out of your head. Because our brain is trained and triggered with every little thing to start thinking and moving and asking questions and going at it. And especially with the highly gifted as well. So that just, I had to learn to shut it off, be present, and be fully, you know, in tune, in line with the person sitting on the screen across me. And it's the same with the horse. You know, you just have to be moving from connection and tuning everything else out. And that is probably why, you know, why it's so interesting to compare this. Yeah, because it is actually the same thing that we're doing.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder about, and I know you say on your website that you are not, you know, people are looking for an acting coach. You're not doing that. You're not specifically working on the craft piece. But at the same time, I am curious how, I mean, I think some of the things that I think there could be overlap for sure. I'd certainly, acting coach would say, you're not being present. You're in your head. You're not, you know, I've had teachers that said that to me. I mean, where do you think, I'm curious from what you've heard from clients, you know, where do you think you fit into the trajectory of some of the craft and technique work they're doing? And how do you think some of this, what you've been able to uncover, has really made a difference for them?
Well, there's this one example I'm really proud of. And it was this actor who had done like some big work, huge movie, leading part. And he hadn't had a new job in 8 years. So he was like completely burned out, frustrated, financial debt, and like really his relationships were suffering under it. He was becoming arrogant because he just did not know how to cope with it anymore. So we worked together on the mindset part. But then, of course, you know, when we're talking in his coaching sessions, obviously, sometimes he shares about a session with the audition, you know, with the crew. And then he shares about the contact with his manager and his agents and things like that. So it's interesting that I don't work with action steps that he has to take to become more successful, or I don't say like, you know, act in this way or say that, but we work on an energetic level. So when he started showing up on a different level in those meetings with his team, they turned around. Mm. Like the entire team turned around. And the same way with, you know, the casting crew. When he was there, instead of thinking, oh shit, she's looking like that. Am I doing it right? Is this what they're looking for? You know, you get in your head and you lose all connection with your character that you want to embody. So yes, those techniques help you own that moment and really, you know, rise up and rise to the occasion. But it's more like mindset and energy work, like those, the combination of those two things, because I love to combine science with the spiritual part. And I have to say, after 8 years, we were working together for 6 months, and he had a lead role. He had several opportunities to be in shows as well. So I was so proud of him stepping up his own game. You know, it was not about writing more letters. It was not about doing more or different, or it was about showing up in a different way. And, you know, being, who are you when you are doing this? And that is where all the energy lies. And that is what people find attractive as well. So that's where, yeah, he shifted completely.
That's kind of fascinating. I'm very intrigued by how you made the journey from being able to reset your mind and find this place of flow and joy to being able to formulate this all in a way that would make it work for others. I mean, are you able to, can you speak a little to that? How this, and I imagine this is, you know, it formulated into this Claim Your Shine modality you talk about, but I'm very, yeah. How are you able to do that, you think?
Well, so when I was 19, I started to follow spiritual courses, self-development courses, things like that. So I had been doing that for like 13 years before I like really went on my own journey. Yeah. Then I got stuck in a burnout due to the bullying at work, and I was really like at a low. But I had actually always had a, like from teenager on, I had had a very negative mindset. You know, I can't do this was my mantra. And my mother always used to say, you know, you're looking at the 10% out of a meter, or the 10 centimeters out of a meter, instead of looking at all the things that are working out. I just couldn't. I just did not know how to make shift. It was really hard for me to be like fully, truly happy. So when I was at that point, I really started to like not hypnotize, but almost, but I started to, what's the word? Brainwash myself into, everything I could absorb around motivation, inspiration, mindset. So that's how I started to shift my own process. And then I was so intrigued that I started to educate myself, taking coaching classes, education on coaching, on highly sensitive, on being highly gifted. And I really started to educate myself. I don't believe in coaches who are just coached by experience. I love the fact that you are a coach by experience who also has the knowledge, and the strategies. So my Claim Your Shine modality is actually a combination of the science of everything that helped me transform in my own journey and my spiritual background. So it's actually a combination of those three areas that made an entire program, which was, 6 months. It was 13 modules. It's all about, finding yourself, connecting with yourself, claiming your shine, building your confidence, finding your superpower, and stepping up your game and your life and your quality of life. Because that I do believe that's what it's about.
I mean, this is very intriguing to me because I'm definitely someone that loves sorting through different coaching modalities and therapeutic models and, different mind techniques, stuff like that. But I'm always curious about the difference between things that work and things that don't. And I imagine, not only is there a huge gap in people that wouldn't be described as highly sensitive, but when it comes to the specific group you're working for, I mean, I'm kind of curious, would you why maybe doesn't a traditional motivational workshop? I mean, I'm thinking of the cliche things right now. I mean, and I'm sure some of these might work, but gratitude journals and starting a regular meditation practice, and maybe, like if we're going into hypnosis and NLP, we're talking about anchoring positive feelings. Oh, I have writer's block. Well, I'm gonna condition myself to take myself back to a place like actors do, to a place where I was more resourceful, and then all of a sudden I'm there. I mean, these are things that are touted as working, but I'm curious what you found didn't work and why you think that is for you.
You know what? I think that's interesting because I believe that all these things work, but they only work when you do. And there's like only 2% of all people who have that kind of commitment. It's like losing weight or quitting smoking or, anything you want to change in your life. Your brain is programmed to keep you in your current situation because it believes that that is safe because that is the way you survived yesterday. That is the way our, survival brain, the reptilian brain, thinks. It does not have any more knowledge than that. It's not very evolved. It's about, getting you to survive. And by doing that, it believes that doing what you did yesterday is safe. Even if you're an obese person who is like an immediate danger, unless the doctor tells you to change your diet or you'll die tomorrow, it's not going to work because that's the strongest part of our brain because with a little bit of stress, everything in the subconscious part, it's all connected there. And it just takes over. It's that subtle voice behind the scenes, in acting terms. It's that voice when you commit to getting up at 6 a.m. to go for a run every morning because you want to have a healthy lifestyle or a walk, I don't care. But it's that voice telling you that the bed is better. You're too tired. You need to rest now more so that you're fitter later. It's raining. It's whatever. Why you're not going. And it's because of that voice and of the reptilian brain that 98% of us is not able to make change. And that is why certain techniques that do work are not working because we don't do the work. So that's what I've partially based my program around as well, because, if you don't deal with that part of our brain, nothing is going to change. So it's, you know, the way I like to work, it's first about acknowledging those thoughts, that they're there. The second step is like deciding, is this something that is serving me? Yes, or that's my main question. Is this serving me? Hmm. You know, a choice, a thought, a whatever. Is this serving me? Yes. Continue. No. Get the fuck out of there. You know, you're not obligated to continue in that spiral of thoughts. You're not, you know, no one is forcing you to do that. We engage in it because we're just not aware enough of it. And it's about training your brain. It's top sport. It's training your brain to acknowledge it, to see it, to question it, and to shift it from there on as well. And the more you shift it, the more you'll make new pathways, you know, in your neurons, so that it's, you know, easier the next time for your brain to start taking that new route. But like in big stress, you will still fall back in default mode. And that's why it's so important to train this. You just have to, like anything, your brain is like a muscle and you need to mold it. You need to work it like your body in order for it to work for you instead of against you.
Do you find that highly sensitive people respond more to this kind of training and regimen versus either therapy or other coaching modalities? I mean, what do you think the difference is there?
What my you know, I've coached over hundreds of highly sensitive people. What I every time heard is therapy, psychology, psychiatry, I don't care. The reason why they feel it's not working for them, and I was one of them, is because they have no idea what you're talking about. You know, people tend to tell you, don't take it so personally or just let it go. But those two things for someone with a highly sensitive brain that is processing everything on a deeper level is just not something that goes natural for us. So we need techniques to cope with it. And having someone who, A, knows how that feels, how that works, and who has struggled with the brain, you know, her or himself, is a big asset, because that's what made people resonate with me, for example, because, you know, they knew I had been through shit as well. And I got out of it and I became stronger and I really found myself. And, you know, you keep reinventing yourself over and over again, but it has made a huge difference in my life to be able to shift that and make that transformation. And I believe that's one of the reasons why highly sensitive people resonate more with coaching, because it's also from a point of experience. But the second thing is, for me, most therapists and psychologists work from, you know, you go to their room or their space and you talk about an hour about what's not working for you in your life. All week long, your brain is thinking, what are we going to share? What did we share? Because that's the way the brain works. So you're training your brain to be in a negative spiral. And highly sensitive people are very, very prone to that. You know, we're very, very sensitive to that. So coaching works in a constructive way. You know, it's about making that way forward with practical steps and tools and techniques that you can use. It's more practical. And that is what I think that a lot of highly sensitive people need, because we're already too much in our head. Yeah. We need stuff to bring us back down to earth, for example, just like one simple thing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sitting here right now, and first of all, I'm wondering where I am in this highly sensitive path. I mean, I will tell you that something about what you do resonates with me, and it's maybe it's the claim your shine idea. Maybe I think there is something about part of my journey. Part of the reason I've started this show is as a means of tuning into what my highest form of self-expression could be, creative self-expression. And I there are a lot of times, I got to tell you, Kathy, where, you know, I even as I'm sitting here in this interview, I'm going, do I need to pump this up for the audience? Do I need to throw another joke in? Do I need to, you know, go off on some weird topic? You know, I mean, it's tough. Those voices are always there. Now, I will say that I've also toyed with this idea of, well, what if I spoke these things out loud in the present with others? And, you know, a lot of the time I feel if I were to do that in social gatherings, especially where I can like really retreat into myself and overthink everything, I feel like I'd say a lot of things like, I feel like you hate me right now. I feel like a loser. Like these inner voices are killing me.
Yeah.
What would you say to that situation? What's going on with me? What, why, how can I find peace and bliss, if you can describe this, in being my most fully expressed self?
Yeah, that's interesting. So I'm going to take you back to what I just said about those thoughts. These thoughts are not serving you. So it's actually stupid and easy and simple, but that's, you know, the way it works best. It's about getting conscious about those thoughts when they're occurring. And at that point, you'll be like, okay, I feel like a loser. Okay, she hates me. You can ask yourself a question. Is that really true? Do I have the answer to this question? Am I sure that that's the truth? No, you're not. Unless she shares that with you, her deepest insight, you don't know if that's true. You know, it's just made up ideas in our brain, which is very good at. So it's just important to start parking those thoughts, not engaging in them. And you can do that by, at that point, you know, engage in a fun little breathing exercise or grounding exercise, just connecting your feet with the ground, feeling, you know, roots from your feet going into the earth, whatever works for you, just breathing through your nose, in and out into your stomach, just try to see, you know, how slow can I make my breath go, play around with it. But most of all, I would say is train your presence. Train yourself in parking the thought, connecting with your body again, with doing a little breathing or a grounding, and then engage again in, I am present. That's like my mantra at that point. I am present. And at that point, you know, you put all of your focus into the conversation, like just listen, be present, show up, you know, in the conversation. You don't even have to say anything if you don't feel like it, but just be present, because that's the most beautiful gift you can give to your environment at that point, being with them, you know, just being present with them. Like really, you will be amazed with what you'll pick up by being present. And then when you feel like, ooh, it will come like sort of in flow from alignment when it's your turn to speak. That's how I had to learn to coach as well, because in the beginning, it's exactly that million things go through your head. And ooh, what question should I ask? Or should I ask this? Or should we go back to that? Or, oh shit, you know, if you do that, you're a useless coach, because you're not being present. When you're talking to yourself, you're not listening to what your client is saying or the person across from you. So train your brain and be present in the moment. Most beautiful gift you can give them and yourself, because when there's no self-doubt, tell me, Greg, can you just be in the moment and just enjoy yourself? Because if there's nothing else, that's what you are doing.
Yeah.
You know, because nothing is wrong in the moment when you are just being. So tuning into that and leaning into that is the first step to really claiming your shine. And that way you start to grow into like really taking in the space, because you see that by doing that, it's not, we tend to believe that when we make ourselves bigger, we're bringing other people down. But actually, by making yourself smaller, you're not inspiring anyone. It's by making yourself bigger that you give others the opportunity to rise above and surf along on your energy waves if they choose to. But they're not obligated. You're not putting a gun to their head. You know, you are just filling the room with a higher energy. Most beautiful gift ever. You know, and yet still we tend to make ourselves so small because we feel like we're being too much, or, you know, what might they think? Oh, we might look arrogant, or, you know, that's not what we want to be. But I think we can turn that around and ask ourselves more interesting questions.
Yeah. I'm wondering what your take is on self-love and the artist's endless search for validation. I mean, I think that is one of the biggest traps that an artist can get into. It's, is this good enough? Is my audition gonna, I didn't get the part. That means I'm a bad actor. I mean, you know, even in school, everybody was labeling this person's a good actor, this person's a bad actor, and just stripping people away of their potential. And look, as somebody that, you know, also has explored a lot of these different modalities and kind of takes more of a spiritual perspective, I you know, it almost becomes hard for me to look at others and go, yes, you are this one defined thing. Because all we are is really a spectrum of change, I think, at our core. But that said, I'd love to show that same grace to myself. Like, I would love to be, that's always the tough part, right? Turning it on yourself. So I guess I'm curious, where do you think this endless search for validation fits in? How would you reframe that in people's minds that really crave the applause of an audience?
Well, I would say it could be two things. It could be, first of all, just, you know, that you've had have created some sort of addiction to it. That could be one thing. The other thing could be that that's something we very often see when people had a rough, unsafe childhood, or, you know, just weren't able to fully be themselves, or there was no room for errors and you were not allowed to fail or make mistakes. That's what we call an unsafe environment. And especially highly sensitive people, which most actors are, because that's why they're so brilliant at what they do, because that right part of the brain is, you know, very strong activated.
Yeah.
But when you're, that's your experience. We have, it's a little bit like self-fulfilling prophecy, and you tend to be in the circle of, you know, they're not going to think it's good enough anyway. And that's your mindset. That is what your subconscious is behind the scenes arranging for everything. That's why relationships most often don't feel like they're working out for those people, because most of the time, those are not the most happy people behind the scenes either. But that has to do with the fact that they're afraid to be rejected. And we call that rejection sensitivity. So that's a loop that you can get stuck in when you felt like at one point in your life that you were really unsafe to be yourself. And that's where we'll, like, I've been stuck in that for over 20 years, like looking for validation from my father, like, oh, am I finally good enough? But it's not until the point that you are good enough for yourself that that validation will rise to the occasion. Because that's what happened in my situation. He stepped up his game when I was not asking for it anymore, because I was not reliant on his validation anymore. And that's when it will come. Because your energy is here, and that's when it will start to attract more of the same. But when your energy is on a level of, I'm not good enough, that's what you'll keep experiencing. It doesn't have to, you know, mean that you're not doing it. You can have so many successes, but that's why a lot of actors will still feel they're never successful enough, like you say so beautifully, because, you know, their subconscious is trained in that rejection sensitivity, and they just can't see, you know, the amazing job they're doing and the beautiful people that they are underneath at all. So that's just, that's a really hard situation to be in, but yes, you can shift that around. It's hard work, but it's
Well, look, I know that a lot of people can check out your work. There seems like there's some exciting things going on. I mean, if you, everybody, and we'll link to this, KathySpasAcademy.com. You can see a lot of her stuff. Spotlight Stress is the name of the show, as well as you have a book coming out, Spotlight Stress. I mean, can you speak a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so actually the book is me giving everything away. It's what I've done with my high ticket clients, and it's the entire program written in a book with all the steps, all the techniques, all the strategies, quotes from famous artists, my own personal experience, you know, transforming, really explaining how the brain works, how you can shift that around, and how you can make it work for you instead of against you. So that is actually what that book is about. And yeah.
Why are you doing this? Are you the most financially abundant? Are you making more money than Bezos right now? What is the motivation behind this?
Well, first of all, yes, of course. Otherwise, I would not give everything away. But no, I'm actually, that's the reason I do the show as well, because the show is actually costing me money to, you know, I know, you know, how much it costs time, energy, and money to make a show, to air it, to do everything you need to do. And I'm not a technical person, so I have a VA who has to do those things. So that is costing me money to make it. But I really want to inspire, create an impact, and just, you know, shine my light and let other people shine theirs as well. I think that's probably the biggest gift I can share with the world. And that's my legacy I want to leave behind. So I feel like it's time. It's time to step up all of our games, and that this is my part in helping the world do that for those who feel ready to do it.
This makes me think there's something else on the horizon. There's something that you got something up your sleeve. You're giving it all away. I'm thinking there's a, I don't know if you're going to start a mastermind. We're going to start going to Kathy Spa's retreats. I mean,
well, not yet anyway. I'm not yet anyway.
But you are open to the idea of new inspiration coming to you.
Yeah, exactly. Because before I would do this to attract coaching clients, but I have not started working with a new client for over a year because I don't feel like coaching right now. So it has to be like one super interesting, amazing person that I feel like, whoa, I really want to work with you, that I would say like, yes, let's do it. So to me, it's more exclusive, and There's nothing at this point that I'm selling. I'm actually literally thinking, you know, how can I make my show break even, just so that, you know, it's like Walt Disney. They make money to make movies. They don't make movies to make money. So that's, to me, the same thing. I love making my show. I love writing my book. I just want things to keep flowing, so we can keep doing that. But to be honest, there's nothing behind it. I have nothing to sell at this point. So I'm not saying it might not change, but at this point, there's not even an idea going around. So I am open to the universe to receive those ideas for sure. But no, I'm just sharing.
Yes. That's interesting, because it's it does make me think of some practices I've heard from coaches and content creators, influencers. They talk about that giving away all the value ultimately is the best thing you can do for your business, because it can inspire you to go to new levels. It can, people are just going, oh, wow, this Kathy, she's really putting all this out there. It makes me want to work with her more. I don't know. I mean, do you believe energetically that could be what's going on?
Yeah, maybe, because I've never been someone who was working at small price ranges. So when people did want to work with me, they had to, you know, come up with quite the investment. And there's a lot of resistance, you know, when you have those intake conversations, there's a lot of resistance with a lot of people because they find it really hard to invest in themselves, because that is self-love, you know, the biggest step you have to take. So I truly believe that investing in yourself is the best thing you can do for yourself because it creates a certain amount of commitment. So that was actually always my belief, that if you just give everything for free, a book is not for free, but comparing to a coaching program between 15,000 and 150,000 euros, that's for free, you know? So that's just something I would say. I believe that just for me at this point, that's where my energy wants to go. I want to follow, I just want to be in tune with what my soul desires. And I do believe that the universe will show me ways for it to keep going. If it wants me to do this, if it wants me to elevate the energy of the world and the way I can do that, then it will show me the way and it, you know, it will start creating income maybe in other ways. I don't care how it flows. You know, we'll see.
Who are you? How did you get to? I don't even think Brené Brown would give it all away. No, I mean, how did you get to this point? This is pretty. I mean, this it feels like it's an extension of the work you do with people. It seems that even with, I mean, I think about if I were to go back, there was a point in my life, Kathy, where when I was really pursuing acting, and I think about it this way with this podcast too, which is sometimes can be soul crushing. But yeah, you want to have a left brain mentality in some ways, just so you work smart. You look at the business plan, you got to get your headshots, you got to sign this up, look at all the lists, here are the possible different paths you could take, blah, 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 blah. But what you, where you're coming from feels a lot more peaceful, a lot more aligned, a lot more in flow, and clearly it seems to get results for people. So, I mean, what is this misunderstanding about the way reality works that most people have? Why are we so systems-oriented and trying to get there? Or if we are, how do we blend it with this place where you're at and bringing your clients?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I was the same way because I was naturally I have a very masculine driven energy. So I'm like, let's do this, create, you know, generate activities, do this marketing, blah, blah, posting. I post when I feel like it, but that's very rarely these days. So, but before I was like very strict and blah blah blah, and it can work. You know, I'm not against it. But what I noticed is that when my energy was not aligned, I could do whatever I wanted and it was just not flowing. And I've created a life for myself where I'm not dependent on if that client comes in or not. So I'm not coming from a place of shortage anymore. And even if financially I do feel like, oh, things are getting excited, I will raise my vibration because I'm not, the shortage is not a place where I want to be at. So I tune in with abundance and with flow and with prosperity and these kind of energies. And I just let it flow and I tune in with fun because fun is where a lot of creativity and attraction lies as well.
This is interesting. You know, before we go, just because, well, we did talk about telepathic horses briefly. When you mention energy, what exactly are we talking about here? Because you said energy work, and that made me go, ah, yes, Kathy's a little, we got a little witchy energy going on here. We got a little, Reiki stuff. I mean, I don't know. It seems, do we get a little esoteric chakra work? I mean, I'm curious, what is your relationship to the energetic arts?
I mean, my mother teaches about chakras and she's a Reiki healer. I'm not.
Okay.
That must be more
digestible for most people because, yeah, a lot of people are, they, you know, a lot of these people make promises, but like you said, you like to back stuff up with science too.
Yeah, I do. It's all the same. You know, what I found to be true in my perception is metaphysics, Albert Einstein and so many others are telling us everything is energy. Everything consists out of energy vibrating on a certain frequency. And that's how it becomes matter, physical matter. So we as people, we are 99.999999% built up from energy. There's only 0.00001% that is actually physical matter. What are we talking about? We are whining about the physical realm all the time. But attraction, I like to see us like magnets. Where you put your frequency at is exactly what you'll attract, because that is the way energy works. And it's that easy. And you can, you choose which vibration you tune into and which frequency, you know, you put yourself on. And that's so easy to do. And you can do that at any time. It's just, it's training. It's top sport. It's not to be, taken lightly, because you do have to do the work, the inner work. But yeah, I do believe in Reiki. I do believe in chakras. I'm just not the person who uses that a lot. I can say, oh, you have pain on your throat. Oh, that's your throat chakra. Is there something, you know, you find hard to communicate? I might use that in coaching, but not very often. No, I'm not that kind of, I'm not the, in Belgium, we say the goat wool sock girl. I'm not that kind of person.
Wow.
I do like fancy suits, and I do like luxury trips, and I do like to, being served as well. I like to serve, and I love to be served as well. I don't see anything wrong with that. I see that as energy and money circulating. And that's the way it should be. It's the way it's meant to be. That's why there should not be shortage for anyone. It's not the way the world was designed to be.
You think so? You really think that there is abundant? I mean, I've thought about this too, about it. It's a beautiful idea that if we all found our flow and we all found this thing that we're meant to do, if we all claimed our shine, we could have this abundant life and lifestyle. What do you say to people that, I mean, maybe it's just not in your vibration. My skeptical question would be, well, what about the economics of that? Not everybody, if the world, everybody did this, then how would we all have luxurious lifestyles? But at the same time, that doesn't necessarily mean everybody would want a luxurious lifestyle either. So maybe it does balance out. I don't know. What do you think?
Actually, it's very logical, because if everyone is luxurious, then we're all spending a lot of money and everybody is abundant, because there's work, there's income. But it's very simple, because there's the few percent in the world who own a lot of the big companies, including the media, the pharmacy, who all, you know, it's in their biggest interests that the rest of the world is kept small. And that's the way that, I'm raised Catholic. That's the way the Bible works, exactly the same way. It's not, I believe in God as in the universe, as in the energy. But I don't believe that there's a man judging people for being gay, for having an abortion, for, you know, what the fuck? Who the fuck believes that bullshit? That's written by people. There's no God. God comes from a place of love. Do you honestly believe that love would do that? No way. No way. Not buying into it. It's all designed by people who have more, who want more, and who want to bring other people down for them to have more. It's egocentric, but that's easy. That's easy, but it's for us, it's easy as well to keep ourselves small. Oh, you know, it's hard, hard, hard. No, it's not hard. It's not hard. Just step out of it and oof, it's gone, you know?
Yeah. Wow. Wow. This woman just laid it down, folks. You just took on the Bible. I love it.
I'm sorry. Oh my God. I know that America is a lot more religious than here these days, but no, I cannot buy into that bullshit. It's the same way with I don't want to judge religions, because I believe that there's a lot of good in it, But I cannot believe that there's so many religions bringing women down. That's written by men because they saw what a powerful being a woman is, to keep them small and to keep them down. And we bought into that bullshit. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, hey, that's why I'm intimidated sometimes to talk to these women at parties. I mean, I'll be honest.
Don't be, because they're not more or better than you, and they're not less either. They're just interesting.
Nah, yeah, I look, exactly. Well, it's my curiosity that, similarly to you, but I don't know, maybe not diagnosed, but when you talked about that searching and wanting to be curious, I related a lot to that, and certainly, yeah, I think the work you're doing is very interesting. I learned a lot more about highly sensitive people today. I learned that you may be making as much money as Jeff Bezos, which I didn't know was going to come out.
No, that's not true. Sure, not true.
No, I mean, that's amazing. It's amazing stuff. Look, Kathy Spaz, that's SPAAS, academy.com. We'll link to that. Spotlight Stress. And the book where she gives it all away. Yeah, we all want these secrets. I'm very curious about these secrets. Tell me this.
And I would also say, sorry to interrupt you, but you can find the show on YouTube on Spotlight Stress. And we do the same thing there. These artists, they share very openly their own story and their own journey to success and, you know, the roadblocks that they had. And we do share some tips and tricks in there as well. So if that's something that would interest you, I would definitely check it out.
Yeah. Sorry. Before we go. No. That's I appreciate you interrupting me. That's good. That's good. Because, you know, I can do it to the guests, too, sometimes. Have you had a paranormal experience with a horse? Have you seen ghosts? Have ghosts?
No, but I have dreamt. I do. I am a firm believer of past lives. I've experienced things connecting me with past lives, and I have had connection with a horse in a past life when I was an Indian person.
Wow.
That's a Native American, actually. Yeah. So there you go. We're closer than you might think.
Yes. I love it. Well. Kathy Spaz.
There you go.
I will say her name one more time, though. I'm like, this is a married woman. I don't want to say this name too much. Yes. It's such a pleasure talking with you. Very interesting perspective on things. I love how, you know, you can talk about the spiritual on one hand, but really it seems like your work is grounded in a way that's producing tangible results for people. So I'm always fascinated by transformational work that does work. So thank you for sharing that with me, and keep doing what you're doing. I'm excited to catch up with you in the future.
Thanks, I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you for coming on, Kathy. See, here's the ironic thing. By her telling me she enjoyed the way I pronounced her name, I have performance anxiety over it now. Kathy Spaz. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I want to thank Rodney McGilvery for the theme music. I want to thank Zero Boy for the pre-theme music. And I want to thank the AI. I just assumed that you got really advanced from ChatGPT and created me and the listeners and everybody who's been on this podcast and all the topics, and we're living in a simulation. Bye, everybody.